Now, whenever I face a pressing problem that threatens to worry me, I give it what I call the old Willis H. Carrier formula. If you think Willis H. Carrier had troubles, listen, you ain't heard nothing yet. Here's the story of Earl P. Haney of Winchester, Massachusetts. Here's the story as he told it to me himself on November 17, 1948, in the Hotel Statler in Boston. Back in the 20s, he said, I was so worried that ulcers began eating the lining of my stomach. One night I had a terrible hemorrhage. I was rushed to a hospital connected with the School of Medicine of Northwestern University of Chicago. My weight dropped from 175 pounds to 90 pounds. I was so ill, I was warned not even to lift my hand. Three doctors, including a celebrated ulcer specialist, said my case was incurable. I lived on alkaline powders and a tablespoonful of half milk and half cream every hour. A nurse put a rubber tube down into my stomach every night and morning and pumped out the contents. This went on for months. Finally, I said to myself, Look here, Earl Haney, if you have nothing to look forward to except a lingering death, you might as well make the most of the little time you have left. You have always wanted to travel around the world before you die, so if you're ever going to do it, you'll have to do it now. When I told my physicians I was going to travel around the world and pump out my own stomach twice a day, they were shocked. Impossible. They'd never heard of such a thing. They warned me that if I started around the world, I would be buried at sea. No, I won't, I replied. I've promised my relative that I will be buried in the family plot in Broken Bow, Nebraska, so I'm going to take my casket with me. I arranged for a casket, put it aboard a ship, and then made arrangements with the steamship company, in the event of my death, to put my corpse in a freezing compartment and keep it there till the liner returned home. I set out on my trip imbued with the spirit of old Omar. Ah, make the most of what we yet may spend, before we too into the dust descend. Dust into dust, and under dust to lie, sans wine, sans song, sans singer, and sans end. The moment I boarded the SS President Adams in Los Angeles and headed for the Orient, I felt better. I gradually gave up my alkaline powders and my stomach pump. I was soon eating all kinds of food, even strange native mixtures and concoctions that were guaranteed to kill me. As the weeks went by, I even smoked long black cigars and drank highballs. I enjoyed myself more than I had in years. We ran into monsoons and typhoons, which should have put me in my casket, if only from fright, but I got an enormous kick out of all this adventure. I played games aboard the ship, sang songs, made new friends, stayed up half the night. When we reached China and India, I realized that the business cares that I had faced back home were paradise compared to the poverty and hunger in the Orient. I stopped all my senseless worrying and felt fine. When I got back to America, I had gained 90 pounds and had almost forgotten I even had a stomach ulcer. I had never felt better in my life. I went back to business and haven't been ill a day since. Earl P. Haney told me he realizes now that he was unconsciously using the self-same principles that Willis H. Carrier used to conquer worry. First, I asked myself, what is the worst that could possibly happen? The answer was death. Second, I prepared myself to accept death. I had to. There was no choice. The doctors said my case was hopeless. Third, I tried to improve the situation by getting the utmost enjoyment out of life for the short time I had left. If, he continued, if I had gone on worrying after boarding that ship, I have no doubt that I would have made the return voyage inside my coffin. But I relaxed. I forgot all my troubles. And this calmness of mind gave me a new burst of energy which actually saved my life. So, rule two is this. If you have a worry problem, apply the magic formula of Willis H. Carrier by doing these three things. One, ask yourself, what is the worst that can possibly happen? Two, Prepare to accept it if you have to. 3. Then calmly proceed to improve on the worst. Chapter 3. What worry may do to you. Those who do not know how to fight worry die young. Dr. Alexis Carroll. Many years ago, a neighbor rang my doorbell one evening and urged me and my family to be vaccinated against smallpox. He was only one of thousands of volunteers who were ringing doorbells all over New York City. Frightened people stood in lines for hours at a time to be vaccinated. Vaccination stations were opened not only in all hospitals, but also in firehouses, police precincts, and in large industrial plants. More than 2,000 doctors and nurses worked feverishly day and night, vaccinating crowds. The cause of all this excitement? 8 people in New York City had smallpox, and 2 had died. 2 deaths out of a population of almost 8 million. Now, I had lived in New York for many, many years, and no one had ever yet rung my doorbell to warn me against the emotional sickness of worry, an illness that, during the same period, had caused 10,000 times more damage than smallpox. No doorbell ringer has ever warned me that 1 person out of 10 now living in these United States will have a nervous breakdown, induced in the vast majority of cases by worry and emotional conflicts. So I'm writing this chapter to ring your doorbell and warn you. The great Nobel Prize winner in medicine, Dr. Alexis Carroll, said, "Businessmen who do not know how to fight worry die young. And so do housewives and horse doctors and bricklayers." A few years ago, I spent my vacation motoring through Texas and New Mexico with Dr. O.F. Gober, one of the medical executives of the Santa Fe Railway. His exact title was Chief Physician of the Gulf, Colorado, and Santa Fe Hospital Association. We got to talking about the effects of worry, and he said 70% of all patients who come to physicians could cure themselves if they only got rid of their fears and worries. "Don't think for a moment that I mean their ills are imaginary," he said. "Their ills are as real as a throbbing toothache, and sometimes 100 times more serious. I refer to such illnesses as nervous indigestion, some stomach ulcers, heart disturbances, insomnia, some headaches, and some types of paralysis. These illnesses are real. I know what I'm talking about," said Dr. Gober, "for I suffered from a stomach ulcer for 12 years. Fear causes worry. Worry makes you tense and nervous and affects the nerves of your stomach and actually changes the gastric juices of your stomach from normal to abnormal and often leads to stomach ulcers." Dr. Joseph F. Montague, author of the book Nervous Stomach Trouble, says much the same thing. He says, "You do not get stomach ulcers from what you eat. You get ulcers from what is eating you." Dr. W.C. Alvarez of the Mayo Clinic says, "Ulcers frequently flare up or subside according to the hills and valleys of emotional stress." That statement was backed up by a study of 15,000 patients treated for stomach disorders at the Mayo Clinic. 4 out of 5 had no physical basis whatever for their stomach illnesses. Fear, worry, hate, supreme selfishness, and the inability to adjust themselves to the world of reality. These were largely the causes of their stomach illnesses and stomach ulcers. Stomach ulcers can kill you. According to Life magazine, they now stand 10th in our list of fatal diseases. I recently had some correspondence with Dr. Harold C. Habine of the Mayo Clinic. He read a paper at the annual meeting of the American Association of Industrial Physicians and Surgeons, saying he had made a study of 176 business executives whose average age was 44.3 years. He reported that slightly more than a third of these executives suffered from 1 of 3 ailments peculiar to high-tension living: heart disease, digestive tract ulcers, and high blood pressure. Think of it. A third of our business executives are wrecking their bodies with heart disease, ulcers, and high blood pressure before they even reach 45. What price success? and they aren't even buying success. Can any man possibly be a success who's paying for business advancement with stomach ulcers and heart trouble? What shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his health? Even if he owned the whole world, he could sleep in only one bed at a time and eat only 3 meals a day. Even a new employee can do that and probably sleep more soundly and enjoy his food more than a high-powered executive. Frankly, I would rather be a carefree person with no responsibility than wreck my health at 45 by trying to run a railroad or a cigarette company. The best-known cigarette manufacturer in the world dropped dead from heart failure while trying to take a little recreation in the Canadian woods. He amassed millions and fell dead at 61. He probably traded years of his life for what is called business success. In my estimation, this cigarette executive with all his millions was not half as successful as my father, a Missouri farmer who died at 89 without a dollar. The famous Mayo brothers declare that more than half our hospital beds are occupied by people with nervous troubles. Yet when the nerves of these people are studied under a high-powered microscope in a post-mortem examination, their nerves, in most cases, are apparently as healthy as the nerves of Jack Dempsey. Their nervous troubles are caused not by a physical deterioration of the nerves, but by emotions of futility, frustration, anxiety, worry, fear, defeat, despair. Plato said that the greatest mistake physicians make is that they attempt to cure the body without attempting to cure the mind. Yet the mind and body are one and should not be treated separately. It took medical science 2,300 years to recognize this great truth. We're just now beginning to develop a new kind of medicine called psychosomatic medicine, a medicine that treats both the mind and the body. It is high time we are doing that, for medical science has largely wiped out the terrible diseases caused by physical germs, diseases such as smallpox, cholera, yellow fever, and scores of other scourges that swept untold millions into untimely graves. But medical science has been unable to cope with the mental and physical wrecks caused not by germs, but by emotions of worry, fear, hate, frustration, and despair. Casualties caused by these emotional diseases are mounting and spreading with catastrophic rapidity. One out of every six of our young men called up by the draft in the Second World War was rejected for psychiatric reasons. What causes insanity? No one knows all the answers, but it's highly probable that in many cases fear and worry are contributing factors. The anxious and harassed individual who's unable to cope with the harsh world of reality breaks off all contact with his environment and retreats into a private dream world of his own making, and this solves his worry problems. I have on my desk a book by Dr. Edward Podolsky entitled Stop Worrying and Get Well. Here are some of the chapter titles in that book. What Worry Does to the Heart. High blood pressure is fed by worry. Rheumatism can be caused by worry. Worry less for your stomach's sake. How worry can cause a cold. Worry and the thyroid. The worrying diabetic. Another illuminating book about worry is Man Against Himself by Dr. Carl Menninger, one of the Mayo brothers of psychiatry. Dr. Menninger's book will not give you any rules about how to avoid worry, but it will give you a startling revelation of how we destroy our bodies and minds by anxiety, frustration, hatred, resentment, rebellion, and fear. You'll probably find a copy in your public library. Worry can make even the most stolid person ill. General Grant discovered that during the closing days of the Civil War. The story goes like this. Grant had been besieging Richmond for 9 months. General Lee's troops, ragged and hungry, were beaten. Entire regiments were deserting at a time. Others were holding prayer meetings in their tents, shouting, weeping, and seeing visions. The end was close. Lee's men set fire to the cotton and tobacco warehouses in Richmond, burned the arsenal, and fled from the city at night while towering flames roared up into the darkness. Grant was in hot pursuit, banging away at the Confederates from both sides and the rear, while Sheridan's cavalry was heading them off in front, tearing up railway lines and capturing supply trains. Grant, half-blind with a violent sick headache, fell behind his army and stopped at a farmhouse. "I spent the night," he records in his memoirs, "in bathing my feet in hot water and mustard, and putting mustard plasters on my wrists and on the back part of my neck, hoping to be cured by morning." The next morning, he was cured instantaneously, and the thing that cured him was not a mustard plaster, but a horseman galloping down the road with a letter from Lee saying he wanted to surrender. "When the officer bearing the message reached me," Grant wrote, "I was still suffering with a sick headache, but the instant I saw the contents of the note, I was cured." Obviously, it was Grant's worries, tensions, and emotions that made him ill. He was cured instantly, the moment his emotions took on the hue of confidence, achievement, and victory. 70 years later, Henry Morgenthau, Jr., Secretary of the Treasury in Franklin D. Roosevelt's cabinet, discovered that worry could make him so ill that he was dizzy. He records in his diary that he was terribly worried when the president, in order to raise the price of wheat, bought 4,400,000 bushels in one day. He says in his diary, "I felt literally dizzy while the thing was going on. I went home and went to bed for 2 hours after lunch." If I want to see what worry does to people, I don't have to go to a library or a physician. I can look out of the window of my home where I'm writing this book, and I can see within one block one house where worry caused nervous breakdown, and another house where a man worried himself into diabetes. When the stock market went down, the sugar in his blood and urine went up. When Montaigne, the illustrious French philosopher, was elected mayor of his hometown, Bordeaux, he said to his fellow citizens, "I am willing to take your affairs into my hands, but not into my liver and lungs." This neighbor of mine took the affairs of the stock market into his bloodstream and almost killed himself. If I want to be reminded of what worry does to people, I don't need to look at my neighbor's houses. I can look at this very room where I'm writing now and be reminded that a former owner of this house worried himself into an untimely grave. Worry can put you into a wheelchair with rheumatism and arthritis. Dr. Russell L. Cecil, a world-recognized authority on arthritis, has listed four of the commonest conditions that bring on arthritis. 1. Marital shipwreck. 2. Financial disaster and grief. 3. Loneliness and worry. 4. Long-cherished resentments. And naturally, these four emotional situations are far from being the only causes of arthritis. There are many different kinds of arthritis due to various causes. But to repeat, the commonest conditions that bring on arthritis are the four listed by Dr. Russell L. Cecil. For example, a friend of mine was hard hit during the Depression that the gas company shut off the gas and the bank foreclosed the mortgage on his house. His wife suddenly had a painful attack of arthritis, and in spite of medicine and diets, the arthritis continued until their financial situation improved. Worry can even cause tooth decay. Dr. William I. L. McGonigal said in an address before the American Dental Association that unpleasant emotions, such as those caused by worry, fear, nagging, may upset the body's calcium balance and cause tooth decay. Dr. McGonigal told of a patient of his who had always had a perfect set of teeth until he began to worry over his wife's sudden illness. During the 3 weeks she was in the hospital, he developed 9 cavities, cavities brought on by worry. Have you ever seen a person with an acutely overactive thyroid? I have, and I can tell you they tremble. They shake, they look like something half scared to death, and that's about what it amounts to. The thyroid gland, the gland that regulates the body, has been thrown out of kilter. It speeds up the heart. The whole body is roaring away at full blast like a furnace with all of its drafts wide open. And if this isn't checked, by operation or treatment, the victim may die, may burn himself out. Some time ago, I went to Philadelphia with a friend of mine who suffered from this condition. We consulted Dr. Israel Bram, a famous specialist who's been treating this type of ailment for 38 years. Here's the advice he had hanging on the wall of his waiting room, painted on a large wooden sign. I copied it down on the back of an envelope while I was waiting. Relaxation and recreation. The most relaxing, recreating forces are a healthy religion, sleep, music, and laughter. Have faith in God, learn to sleep well, love good music, see the funny side of life, and health and happiness will be yours. The first question he asked this friend of mine was, what emotional disturbances brought on this condition? He warned my friend that if he didn't stop worrying, he could get other complications, heart trouble, stomach ulcers, or diabetes. All of these diseases, said that eminent doctor, are cousins, first cousins. When I interviewed film star Merle Oberon, she told me she refused to worry because she knew that worry would destroy her chief asset on the motion picture screen, her good looks. When I first tried to break into the movie, she told me, I was worried and scared. I'd just come from India, and I didn't know anyone in London where I was trying to get a job. I saw a few producers, but none of them hired me, and the little money I had began to give out. For 2 weeks, I lived on nothing but crackers and water. I was not only worried now, I was hungry. I said to myself, maybe you're a fool. Maybe you'll never break into the movies. After all, you have no experience. You've never acted at all. What have you to offer but a rather pretty face? I went to the mirror, and when I looked in that mirror, I saw what worry was doing to my looks. I saw the lines it was forming. I saw the anxious expression. So I said to myself, you've got to stop this at once. You can't afford to worry. The only thing you have to offer at all is your looks, and worry will ruin them. Few things can age and sour a woman and destroy her looks as quickly as worry. Worry curdles the expression. It makes us clench our jaws and lines our faces with wrinkles. It forms a permanent scowl. It may turn the hair gray and in some cases even make it fall out. It can ruin the complexion. It can bring on all kinds of skin rashes, eruptions, and pimples. Heart disease is the number one killer in America today. During the Second World War, almost a third of 1 million men were killed in combat. But during the same period, heart disease killed 2 million civilians, and 1 million of those casualties were caused by the kind of heart disease that's brought on by worry and high-tension living. Yes, heart disease is one of the chief reasons why Dr. Alexis Carroll said, businessmen who do not know how to fight worry die young. The Lord may forgive us our sins, said William James, but the nervous system never does. Here's a startling and almost incredible fact. More Americans commit suicide each year than die from the 5 most common communicable diseases. Why? The answer is largely worry. When the cruel Chinese warlords wanted to torture their prisoners, they would tie their prisoners' hand and foot and put them under a bag of water that constantly dripped, dripped, dripped day and night. These drops of water, constantly falling on the head, finally became like the sound of hammer blows and drove men insane. This same method of torture was used during the Spanish Inquisition and in German concentration camps under Hitler. Worry is like the constant drip, drip, drip of water, and the constant drip, drip, drip of worry often drives men to insanity and suicide. When I was a country lad in Missouri, I was half scared to death by listening to Billy Sunday describe the hellfires of the next world. But he never even mentioned the hellfires of physical agony that worriers may have to face here and now. For example, if you're a chronic worrier, you may be stricken someday with one of the most excruciating pains ever endured by man, angina pectoris. Do you love life? Do you want to live long and enjoy good health? Here's how you can do it. I am quoting Dr. Alexis Carroll again. He said, those who keep the peace of their inner selves in the midst of the tumult of the modern city are immune from nervous diseases. Can you keep the peace of your inner self in the midst of the tumult of a modern city? If you're a normal person, the answer is yes. Emphatically, yes. Most of us are stronger than we realize. We have inner resources that we have probably never tapped. As Thoreau said in his immortal book, Walden, I know of no more encouraging fact than the unquestionable ability of man to elevate his life by a conscious endeavor. If one advances confidently in the direction of his dreams and endeavors to live the life he has imagined, he will meet with a success unexpected in common hours. Surely many of the readers of this book have as much willpower and as many inner resources as has Olga K. Jarvie of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. She discovered that under the most tragic circumstances, she could banish worry. I firmly believe that you and I can also, if we apply the old, old truths discussed in this volume. Here is Olga K. Jarvie's story as she wrote it for me. 8.5 years ago, I was condemned to die a slow, agonizing death of cancer. The best medical brains of the country, the Mayo brothers, confirmed the sentence. I was at a dead-end street. The ultimate gaped at me. I was young. I did not want to die. In my desperation, I phoned to my doctor at Kellogg and cried out to him the despair in my heart. Rather impatiently, he upbraided me. "What's the matter, Olga? Haven't you any fight in you? Surely you will die if you keep on crying." "Yes, the worst has overtaken you. Okay, face the facts. Quit worrying, and then do something about it." Right then and there, I took an oath so solemn that the nails sank deep into my flesh and cold chills ran down my spine. I am not going to worry. I am not going to cry. And if there's anything to mind over matter, I am going to win. I am going to live. The usual amount of x-rays in such advanced cases was at that time 10.5 minutes a day for 30 days. They gave me x-rays for 14.5 minutes a day for 49 days. And although my bones stuck out of my emaciated body like rocks on a barren hillside, and although my feet were like lead, I did not worry. Not once did I cry. I smiled. Yes, I actually forced myself to smile. I am not so idiotic as to imagine that merely smiling can cure cancer. But I do believe that a cheerful mental attitude helps the body fight disease. At any rate, I experienced one of the miracle cures of cancer. I have never been healthier than in the past few years, thanks to those challenging, fighting words, "Face the facts, quit worrying, then do something about it." I'm going to close this chapter by repeating its title, the words of Dr. Alexis Carroll. "Those who do not know how to fight worry die young." The followers of the Prophet Muhammad often had verses from the Quran tattooed on their breasts. I would like to have the title of this chapter tattooed on the breast of every reader of this book. "Those who do not know how to fight worry die young." Was Dr. Carroll speaking of you? Could be. Part 1 in a nutshell. Fundamental facts you should know about worry. Rule 1. If you want to avoid worry, do what Sir William Osler did. Live in day-tight compartments. Don't stew about the future. Just live each day until bedtime. Rule 2. Next time trouble with a capital T backs you up in a corner, try the magic formula of Willis H. Carrier. A. Ask yourself, what's the worst that can possibly happen if I can't solve my problem? B. Prepare yourself mentally to accept the worst, if necessary. C. Then calmly try to improve upon the worst, which you have already mentally agreed to accept. Rule 3. Remind yourself of the exorbitant price you can pay for worry in terms of your health. Those who do not know how to fight worry die young.